Hi, buddy. Welcome to a Thursday edition Bulldog Hour. Captain Gonzo alongside, as always, here until 3. A lot to do today. We'll talk to our pal Matt Norville in just a moment about what happened last night. Matter of fact, two guys front and center are with me right now because Gonzo had the radio broadcast last night because Matt was over on TV with Ralph on Channel 53. So both gentlemen, firsthand knowledge of another Bulldog comeback win for the women and, of course, for the men. Overtime and a win in San Jose. I'll talk to Daryl about that a little bit later on. And as we roll through to the weekend, we are ready now for the bat and ball sports and what is a glorious afternoon in town to get started tomorrow as Fresno State Kickoff Classic for softball underway tomorrow. Matt will have that first game for you tomorrow, 5 o'clock, on our sister station, the Deuce 790. Also want to mention tonight on another sister station, 1430, it will be Gonzo with Fresno Pacific Baseball against Western Oregon, so check that out. And then I'll talk to Paul tomorrow afternoon leading up to the baseball team getting started over at Biden-Bennett. So both sides of Cedar ready to go tomorrow with softball and baseball, and we're going to talk to Matt about that momentarily. We'll get to Daryl toward the bottom of the hour and talk about the Bulldog win in San Jose last night. And hopefully, as we get through this weekend, we're going to have some momentum for this basketball team as they come home for a couple on the men's side while the women go on the road. And we're not that far away now from the conference tourney starting a week early. And we know this for sure. On Monday, March 2nd, Fresno State at noon, the women will be against the 8 and 9 seed winner, which will be determined on Sunday. So we know it'll be a noon start for Jamie White and company and that do or die, what they hope is anyway, a 3-game set for them in Las Vegas. To talk about that, the aforementioned Matt Norville, who is the voice of the Fresno State women's programs for us on 790. Also, he has been on television with Ralph for both men's basketball and women's basketball, and they, Ralph and Matt, still have the senior night festivities for both teams to go, the last telecast of the year, and then Matt will be on radio in Las Vegas for the women. Matt, how you doing, my friend?
How are you, Tony?
I'm just fine, Matt. I was just mentioning last night you and Gonzo were both front and center. Want to ask you about the game first and then the implication going forward, because it's been a topic of conversation about what it's going to take short of winning the conference tourney and whether they can get through the conference tourney because of these close calls. But last night, they're down. San Jose State has the ball. Bulldogs play the foul game to try to get to bonus time to make sure if they have to foul that they're able to get the 1-1. And they get the steal from Udy. They get Hannah's play to Mata, and they tie it. Then I want to ask you about the last possession. Delaney comes in. That was an amazing lob, but how tough for someone coming off the bench to make that particular toss was it, Matt?
Oh, that was extremely tough. Yeah, before we get to that toss, I thought it was I thought Coach White did a phenomenal job yesterday in coaching. Every Whitehead, their big inside, was so dominant and defensively was wreaking some kind of havoc inside with alter shots here and there. But any time that she was maybe out of position, they would look to push. And on that steal that Maddie got, they didn't call a timeout right away. Even though Maddie gets double teamed, she's looking for a guard because she knows Whitehead's under the basket, and they know if they push it, they can get a shot going to the basket, which led to the Mata layup that tied the game on the pass from Hannah. But yeah, coming in, Bree Delaney's a great passer. In the game winner against Colorado State, it was Delaney throwing the basketball inbounds. And what Delaney does is she's such a smart passer that she knows whatever their options are, she will make the right decision. And she's also good at knowing that if it's going to get close to a five count, she'll just burn another timeout. But, yeah, that's difficult. She didn't play a second in that entire game. And I was talking to Josh Mitchell after. It was, what, like 0.05 is what she ended up playing or something like
right.
that? 0.5? I mean, that was just a beautiful pass. And maybe what people lose sight of is that's a tough pass anyway. But then when you have 6'3" Whitehead who's on the ball, that made that pass even more spectacular. And because Allie had hit a game winner already this year and she's hit game winners in the past, Basalo chose to play up on Allie and really front her, which left the back screen wide open, and San Jose State did the right thing, I thought, putting Whitehead on the basketball, but that now takes your rim presence away from the basket, and beautiful execution. It was just a great game, probably the best game I'll see all year, honestly.
Yeah, no question, and your points are well taken, particularly with Delaney, in that she had such a tall player in front of her to make that pass. I don't know what kind of field of vision she really had, but it was a perfect on-the-money play. And the one you brought up before, it reminded me of a team breaking the press the way after UT got the steal, that they were able to turn it in transition. It just reminded me of what happens in an inbound, Matt, when you're trying to break pressure. That's how they handled it. They turned, kicked it, and they got it into forecourt and got the bucket. Now, here's the other side of this thing, and this is the thing. First of all, Gonzo and I were just talking about this earlier in the week, about the ability to advance the ball, because, as you know, Fresno State, the men on Saturday did not have that opportunity with a timeout to advance the ball in the men's game, and they didn't get a good look at the end, although they might have gotten that foul call. That was another story.
Right.
Could have been a charge. But now, not only did Delaney inbound to Gomez, and which you're talking about the Colorado State game, but again, for the second time, we've seen the Bulldogs be able to use the rule that is an NBA rule that Jamie and I talked about, coincidentally, when it first came into play a few years back in the women's game, the ability to advance the ball. Do you like it? I mean, it sure has worked out for Fresno State. In principle, do you like being able to advance the ball in the women's game with the timeout?
Yeah, I love it. I wish the men would adapt it. And it's funny that I've heard both sides, you know, some people will say sometimes, you know, you don't give credit for what you've done all game and you could lose on that. But I always bring up the NBA game, one of Jordan's most iconic shots, they advanced the ball against the Cavs.
Yeah.
Did that take away from the moment? I don't think it did.
Craig Eagle will tell you all about it. Yep, yeah, Craig Eagle will tell you all about that play.
Yes, he will. But so I love it. I think it puts a different kind of coaching strategy in play, too, because now you've got to decide, do you want to keep that timeout? Because now you can advance the ball. And so when you watch these games, even in the NBA, not every team always has a timeout remaining late. So you'll still get that into the game situation based on what you do. But like you said, Fresno State has taken advantage of it. But I go back to the Colorado State game. If Colorado State doesn't advance the ball, there's probably not a buzzer beater. Colorado
That's
State
correct.
Gets that turnaround three in the corner because they advanced the ball. They were able to drop a play and they hit. And then Fresno State gets a play drawn up and wins the game. So, I mean, you can look at it both ways, but I love that rule. I love the four quarters rule. I mean, men's college basketball, and I mean, I played it. That's the only level where you don't play quarters. International, they play quarters. High school, you play quarters. Middle school, you play quarters. You play quarters in the NBA. I just think they should switch that. I think the women's rules, honestly, are the best rules right now, and it's as close to the NBA as it is.
I agree, and I had mentioned that, and actually Jamie and I had talked about it when the rule came into play for the women, that the NBA originally, Matt, you've always been able to advance the ball in a dead ball or a rebound where you didn't try to advance it first, but the NBA used to say if you were inbounding in forecourt, you could not inbound into backcourt, and sometime the bigger challenge was, particularly if they backed off of the inbounder, so they played 5-on-4 defensively, you couldn't get the ball inbounds. The NBA decided to allow you to inbound in backcourt a few years ago, and of course, you still have that ability in the women's game if you choose to, and that does make a huge difference. And I'm with you about both the inbound and about the four quarters, but I don't know. The men move at glacier speed administratively, as you're well aware. Okay, the last thing.
Oh, sorry, Tony.
No, go ahead.
No, what I was going to say about that is you get to see coaching strategy and coaching sets on plays. That's where you get creative on the play. And instead of maybe late in games having, you know, just a prayer and a chuck, you get to see coaches a little more X's and O's, how they design, how do you defend? Like, I mean, even going to yesterday, for example, San Jose State now looks at it and said, should we have switched that? And then now then you don't have Maddie wide open, but then you would have Allie going against a Foca one-on-one. I just think it brings more things into play, and I just love the rule.
Yeah, the last thing I want to mention about this, and we'll move on to softball, but John McLeod when he coached the Phoenix Suns back in the 70s. They had this is before the days of the international clock, so you didn't have the 0.5, but it had 1 second to go. And he's drawing up the play after they called the timeout. And he's going, okay, Westfall, you cut here. Alvin Adams, you go get the ball. And finally somebody goes, coach, we only have a second. He goes, okay, just throw it in and shoot it then. And he ended up at Notre Dame as the head coach after that. The final point I wanted to ask you about basketball, and you and I will certainly have this conversation on that Monday, March 2nd, because I'm going to be coming up right after that game wraps up and you wrap up the post for us. This team has played the high wire routine. I've gotten a lot of emails about it, Matt, saying, you know what, it's been wonderfully entertaining, not great for the blood pressure a lot of times, but how about more 20-point wins like the one we saw in Fort Collins? And the question comes up, with so many close calls, does it make this team even more battle-tested and invincible, or are you, as a Fresno State fan, concerned that one of these days when it matters most in Vegas, that last second is going to go the other way? Are you concerned about that taking them out of the NC2As because this has been such a close call time after time as this team has continued to win?
Yeah, I'm not really concerned about that. I don't really think anyone's invincible, and they've had some comfortable wins. I mean, their last two games, Colorado State was comfortable. UNLV was comfortable, right, too. They were in control throughout, and that was the third-ranked team in the Mountain West. And yesterday, they were up 8 in the fourth quarter. So, and then there was a big call when they were up 6, which was the right call, on the shot clock violation. It's just San Jose State took the lead late. I think there's something to be said when you win games like that. And I think, really, it kind of shows the difference between the women and the men in terms of what the men are starting to get back with Noah Blackwell, that experience at the point guard spot. I think that's the biggest thing I see more than anything. Yeah, you could lose a tight one in Vegas, but I don't think that's going to matter if you're blowing teams out or not anyway, because like I always say, if you're winning comfortably, then they say you haven't been battle tested. If you're coming back, right, and you're winning, well then so you can look at it either way. The fact of the matter is when you're unbeaten and you're the number one team in the Mountain West Conference, obviously unbeaten in conference, I mean, the target's on your back. Boise State has been the team that's been the one that's had the target. Now Fresno State has it. And on top of that, another dimension that adds to it where everyone's giving your best shot is you've got these two twin guards that came in from Arizona that are freshmen. And then you have Allie. And so they look at, if you look at every lineup they play, there are 3, 5, 6 guards that go out. And usually every team has more size than they'd. And they truly, let's be honest, they walk in and go, they're not that good. Well, they are. And so I think you're getting everyone's best shot. And I'd rather have the confidence of knowing I can come back in late in games. I thought yesterday was the perfect example of what confidence they had. Hannah throws the ball into Mata a little too high. It's a turnover. And Allie immediately says, with under a minute left, hey, let's just calm down. They're down 2. They're unbeaten. A big atmosphere, and they play the rest of the game very calm and controlled, and that is because they've been in these games.
Well, I'll tell you what, I agree, Matt, and I guess if you want to look back at the poster children for blowout after blowout and what happens, Tark's defending national champions, the 91 team that was 34-0, and then they get in a close game against Duke and lose. So I understand that it's great to have that on your resume that you win those close games, but I do wonder if they sweep through the rest of the way in conference and they get to a title game and somehow it gets away. And I know that probably San Jose State, I don't know what the bracketing will be because, you know, the Spartans have struggled now as of late. They have to feel, after 2 very close games, the Spartans have to feel like they have a shot. Boise State obviously feels that way. Colorado State, I'm sure, feels that way. If somehow, Matt, they were to get to the title game and then lose for the first time since conference started, is it enough to get in, or are we relegated to only one is going to go from this conference? What's the reality?
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, by the way, to get back to your point, whoever Fresno State plays the opening quarterfinal is going to feel like they should win. New Mexico had double-digit leads on Fresno both times.
That's true.
New Mexico could be that first game, and that is a tough first game. And then if they follow that up, you're possibly looking at Boise State. Boise State's in 3rd now, but, I mean, if they fall to 4th and you're looking at Boise, who Boise's going to feel like they should. So every game they play, the team they play, more than likely in Vegas, is going to feel like they should win. But as far as that, I don't know. I think what helps Fresno State, and I say this a lot, I know their RPI is at 55, but you know as well as I do, the NCAA likes storylines. And if they go unbeaten in conference, you can make an argument that Fresno State could get in on the simple fact that you have freshman twins that were trying to get acclimated to the team, so they lost three games in November, and they've only lost one since, and that was the game that Allie didn't play. But the stat that I think helps Fresno State, honestly, more than anything, if they go unbeaten in the Mountain West, is the fact that only two other teams have three scores that average over 15 points, and that's Oregon and UConn. And what is the NCAA tournament like? They like guard play, and they like scoring. And Fresno State fills it up. And so I think you could. They have to go unbeaten. If they lose the game, it's done, no shot. They go unbeaten, there's a chance. But, I mean, they need a lot to go right. I was looking at RPI this morning. Fresno State's 55. Yale, who beat them on a neutral floor, that's the game that's going to hurt. They beat them on a neutral floor. They're 41, and them and Princeton are going to battle out the Ivy League. And then BYU, 72. And those are the two games that you look at and go, man, if you could have got one of those, that would help. And then their best non-conference win is UC Davis, who is winning their conference, by the way, but there are – RPI is 165. So you could swing it. You can't lose. You can't have a hiccup the rest of the way. That means at Wyoming or Air Force or Nevada, and Nevada's playing much better of late. But I don't know. It's going to be tough. They just do not rate the Mountain West Conference high. Yeah. They just don't. And so, I mean, I was looking at all the bracketology right now. Fresno State, pretty much in everything, is a 12 seed. But I think you, with the twins and their scoring, you could maybe swing it, but a lot of stuff's got to go right.
Yeah, I am of the point of view that the NC2A starts for Fresno State at the Mountain West Tournament. It's actually three games more of the NC2As. You've got to approach it that way by saying you're in single elimination time when you get to that tournament. That's just the reality. Okay, let's turn our attention, Matt, in the few minutes we have towards softball. Now look, I made no secret of this. From the 80s on, we made the pilgrimage year after year for national championship opportunities. 87 in Omaha, 88 and 89 in Sunnyvale, 90 in Oklahoma City, 91, 92. By 94, we're starting to get a complex, right? Okay.
Right.
97, they come close. 98, they break through. At that point, if you would have told me this storied program in 1998 would make just one trip from 1998, that would have been in 1999 when they were out in three in Oklahoma City, that they would not return from 99 to 2020, I would have said you are out of your mind. Does this team have what it takes, pitching-wise and everything else, to get itself at least to a super regional, which they have not been to since they've had super regionals in play? Where are we at with this team, beginning with 5 o'clock on Friday, Cal Poly? You'll have that game on 790. What's your view of this club?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. They are now, their pitching is outstanding. You've got Dolcini, you've got Lung from Clovis, and Danielle East. So you've got good pitching. And you've got McKenzie, who's just an outstanding slap hitter, leadoff hitter, gets on base and can wreak havoc. Over the weekend, they lost to Florida 6-4, but they had bases loaded, one out in the bottom of the seventh, and just couldn't bring home runs. That Florida's ranked 7th in the country. Then they took on Michigan out of the Big Ten, ranked 17th. They lost 1-0 in extra innings in 9 innings, and then you have that international rule in the 8th and the 9th where you put a runner at second. So, and Fresno State just wasn't able to get a runner across. They're going to just have to get off to a good start in the Mountain West. But I thought last year, at the end of the year, they were playing as good as anyone in conference. The problem is they just got off to such a tough start in conference play. Last year, people might not remember, they were 1-6 to start conference. And you were starting to wonder, at least other people were rumbling, is this the year that Fresno State doesn't even make 500 in conference? Well, they went 13-4 the rest of the year in the conference. They swept Boise. And Boise, we got at large a year ago. They just need to start the Mountain West season good. And I think their pitching is going to be there. I love what they have defensively with Broussard and Hernandez and Rolliter. It's just going to come down to, can they get that key hit in the key moment? I think that's going to be the storyline for this team, because when you look at what they did this weekend, they beat Georgia State 5-0, beat South Florida 3-2, 3-0 over Illinois State, So I think their pitching is going to keep them in games. It's going to be, can you get that timely hit? And honestly, that's what softball and baseball a lot of times is all about. Can you get a timely hit when you need it? And I think if Fresno State gets off to a good start in the Mountain West Conference, you know as well as I do, if you get to the NCAA tournament, once you're there, it's just all about matchups.
Yeah. Yeah, and the bounce of the ball and a lot of things that have to go your way, et cetera. And matter of fact, one sidebar, our current fire chief, Kerry Donis, hit a ball in 1990 in Oklahoma City that if it bounces off the fence, the Bulldogs win a critical game against Florida State. It bounces over, runner has to stay at third, they don't win the game, and it changed everything. That's how much, Matt, when you get there, it is the bounce of the ball. You just have to get there first. It gets started with the kickoff classic. Cal Poly at 5 o'clock, Fordham at 7:30, and the Bulldogs also have Fordham on Saturday, Cal on Saturday as well, and then St. Mary's on Sunday. Matt will be there for all of it, and for us, whenever we have airtime, we can jump softball in. We will. It will start Friday, 5 o'clock on 790. Matt, you and I will visit every single week. I can't wait to see what happens with this basketball team and softball as well. Always appreciate it, my friend. Take care. We'll be in touch.
All right, no problem. Have a good one.
Okay, Matt Norville, guys, we'll take a break, come back with Darryl. I want to talk Fresno State basketball. Bulldogs coming off a win last night. I want to talk about where they could be in regard to the seedings. I know we've said they're probably in 8 or 9, but I'm going to talk to Darryl about whether they could find a way to maybe get to 6. It's a long shot, but it would help you in that play-in game. Take a break and address that after this on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Everybody, welcome back to 31 here until 3 o'clock with Bulldog Hour. Remind you again, not only basketball over the weekend, but baseball and softball starting tomorrow. I'll talk to Paul at 2:05 tomorrow as Mike Batesole and company get ready to open the season, not only the home season, but the season itself at Biden-Bennett tomorrow night at 6. We'll talk about that leading up to the game, and of course just talking to Matt, softball already underway, of course, after the tournament in Florida, but they have the kickoff classic this weekend, 5 o'clock Cal Poly, 7:30 Fordham, to open things for Fresno State tomorrow, and then they also have the Invitational the next week, so it's nice for softball to be home, because there have been times in the recent past where they have been at a tournament in Arizona, then of course the Garmin and other things, Cathedral, all that stuff, and they ended up not home for 3 or 4 weeks. This time you get a chance to see them early on, and the weather terrific right now, so hope you're out at both sides of Cedar tomorrow and across the weekend. And of course, basketball wise team back home, the men are for a couple, the women go on the road. They need to keep on winning to keep that perfect record intact, and for the men, they come off of a hard-fought and difficult win, and that's the thing, win last night in San Jose. And to talk about that, our good friend and primary basketball correspondent, it's Darryl Howerton, hoopbag.com, NBA.com. Darryl, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Darryl. Sorry to be about 10 minutes late with you, but I was addressing multiple sports with Matt, and so it's my fault that I didn't bring you up in time. We will rectify that. I will call you up and you and I will do a show, and I'll put it up at midnight on the old midnight show. How about that? So
I guess we won't be able to talk about the Warriors then.
Yeah, that's right. That was deliberate on my part. And by the way, we used to have a midnight show, and like 1 week the guest would be like Ron Jeremy. That would be the kind of sports show we had. So that was a long time ago, and it really didn't last, and it probably should never have gotten started, come to think of it. Me, Ron, and Ted Koppel. That was a show one night. How's that for a show, huh? Top that one, Darryl. That's the way of deflecting any. What?
Yeah, you're not going to pitch. You're not going to get me to pitch any titles for that. I'm going to stay away from
okay,
that.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, it's best just to leave it alone at this point. All right. Okay. Now, I just laugh at thinking about it. Okay. As far as the Warriors, you're right. There is going to be no time for the Warriors until we get to June and the draft, although I will tell you they did it the way they should have done it in Phoenix, play respectable basketball and then lose. That's how the Warriors are supposed to do it between now and draft time. They need those ping pong balls on their side. Now, as far as Fresno State goes, look, you and I have had this conversation. I mentioned to you, and we used to have pickup games, and we had some really good players, JC guys, et cetera. We'd close the gym doors because we knew the coaches, and my job was to get the teams fair. And I told you, if you put the five best guys, quote-unquote best guys, on one side, they would never win because they couldn't beat guys that might have been better suited to their individual roles. In other words, if you've got a whole bunch of guys who all want to shoot threes, then you don't have any rebounding. If you don't have any range, then you have a team that was too much involved with the paint, and that's all there is to it. So the balance is what works. I bring it up because this Fresno State men's team, Darryl, without question, has a tremendous amount of individual talent. We saw it again last night. Nevin Hart saved the day. He was amazing. So we've seen Robinson do this. Hyder, when he's healthy, start of the year, was taking over games. Now we see that Hart is capable of this. We know that Campbell, when he gets it under control, has as much athleticism as anybody on the team. Darryl, can they coalesce in time to make a run in March? Is it possible, or is it, again, as we've talked over and over again, just asking too much for this team to put four straight together?
Yeah, I think it's asking too much. I mean, especially for a team so young, a team that's, you know, just trying to get, a good win over a good team. And when you get down to the Mountain West tournament, yeah, the first round game might be against a average, mediocre squad. But once you get past that first round, you're playing a team that will be going on to the NCAA tournament or the NIT tournament, you know, that most likely, because, you know, Boise State, Utah State, Colorado State, there's some good squads there. And of course, San Diego State is they'll be contending for the NCAA championship. So it's very highly unlikely you're going to pull off a run against those teams without showing signs that you can do so. But it is nice to see these explosions from people like Nevin Hart or Orlando Robinson, you know, and earlier this year, Jared Hyder, because it does show that these freshmen are phenomenal at times. A lot of times it has to do with the consistency, not so much with Robinson, because he's probably going to be the freshman of the year, and not even Nevin Hart lately, because he's stringing up a pretty incredible string of games in February. But, you know, but all in all, to expect, you know, when you're playing so many, you know, it's just a tough sell. But that being said, they are capable of a knockout punch. I wouldn't be surprised if they beat Utah State, who in my mind is the NCAA caliber team this week, because, you know, they played them close last year, and there's five guys on this roster who knows what it takes to beat them. So, you know, I fully anticipate them. You know, I'm rooting for them to pull off one knockout punch against a team that's going to go on and win 20 games.
Well, look, we have talked about the battle of the glass half full or half empty. Obviously, this certainly has not been the year that Justin Hutson and the coaching staff had hoped for, coming off of 23 wins. We also were aware going in you were going to have the miseries of youth. You'll always have that, where you'll make mistakes born out of the fact that guys just have not been through this before. However, Darryl, when I look at this right now, and I see a team that has shown the kind of flashes throughout the year that leads you to believe that they can get it done, I happen to agree with you that I think a big effort against a prohibitive favorite, if Utah State is that, at home is probably in the offing. But the bigger issue becomes this. You know, right now, as we look at the conference, San Diego State is going to be the one seed. I mean, they're five games up. It's a done deal. They also are 25-0, and we hope that at this point they're able to go undefeated, because it would help the conference a great deal to have the Aztecs with a high seed. Utah State, Boise State, Nevada, and Colorado State, all with five losses, three of them with nine wins. All, right there, you're not going to catch any of those teams. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 is done. Here's my question to you. The Bulldogs at 5-9, with UNLV, who was at 6, the only way they can get there would be a total collapse by the Rebels, and the Bulldogs have lost both games to them. So do you just write that off completely? Do you say there's just no way at all that Fresno State can get there, Darryl? Period. I mean, right now, where are you at here? You could get potentially, if you're Fresno State, to 9-9. UNLV has that one other game. In theory, you could catch them, but you're not going to. So do you say it doesn't matter whether you're 7 or whether you're 8? Does it truly matter to you where you're going after a first-round game that you have to win?
Well, I do want to avoid San Diego State. You know, so if there's any way to do that, the higher seed, of course, is the better seed. But that being said, when it comes to Utah State, Boise State, Nevada, when it comes down just to a crapshoot who you're going to play, you know, I really don't think it matters. I think what matters is treating every game like it's an NCAA tournament game now, like it's a Mountain West tournament game right now. Whereas, you know, I like what Coach Hudson, you know, has done as far as cutting the playing rotations down to seven players. To me, it seems like he's treating these games as if it's, he's putting everything on the line. There's no tank in this Fresno State team. They're battling to the end. The win over San Jose State in overtime was great. To see the way Niven Hart has come on these last three games, I think he scored 74 points very efficiently in 84 minutes. And just an explosion, you know, of all the talent that we saw in him. But now we're seeing it done with consistency and dominance. So there's a lot of things to build around with this team. And with the seniors going out, you hope they go out with a flourish, whether that's an upset win with Utah State Saturday or if it's an upset win in the tournament. I think that's what you got your set your sights on. Not necessarily playing for a seed. I think avoiding San Diego State is crucial because you don't want to play a top five, top 10 team. But outside of that, I think it's just looking for that knockout punch that you can ride for the summer.
By the way, the reason I bring up this situation with UNLV, they face a very tough schedule the rest of the way. They're at New Mexico. They've got Colorado State at the Thomas and Mack, but then they're at San Diego State. They have Boise State in, and the Spartans are the finish at San Jose, and the Bulldogs found out last night that it's not an easy out to get rid of the Spartans. So I'm saying there's no guarantee that UNLV isn't going to be vulnerable, even with the tie break, but it would require a total collapse, and it would require Fresno State to win out for the Bulldogs to get to six, which, Darryl, in my opinion, would be a tremendous advantage. You're obviously very much up against the wall with that happening, but if you could get to where you could get the lowest seed, you'd have a shot. If this team is in the 8-9 or 7-10, do you at least like Fresno State's chances? Never mind if it's San Diego State waiting for you, which it would be with the 8-9. Do you like this team's chances to at least get that first one out of the way in Vegas?
Yes, I expect them to win the first day. I mean, when you look at the opponents they're going to be playing on that night, you know, they just showed they can beat San Jose State. They showed they can beat the others. You know, that's not going to be a problem of, you know, Air Force, Wyoming, you know, and especially as they close out this season. That being said, I think it's crucial, though, to have a knockout punch against somebody that they really respect. A team like Utah State is, you know, 20-7 right now, and that's the type of team that might not get a tournament at-large bid, but every metric thing out there is saying they're a team that deserves to be there. And the only thing that kept them from doing that was injuries to their center, to both their centers, actually, in November, December, that, you know, contributed to some early season losses. So if beating a team like Utah State, or, you know, even if a miracle happened in San Diego State was, you know, beatable, those are the type of wins that would carry these freshmen for a long time going forward and would also give these seniors a great memory going out for a season that, you know, wasn't exactly what they expected, but they are playing pretty well. Nate Grimes, New Williams, and Noah Blackwell have been shown in February what they're fully capable of. And Nate Grimes will probably make one of the all-league teams, so, you know, he'll go out on a good note. And, you know, that being said, it's going to be fun to see how this team closes out the season. The record won't look nice, but I just want to see one knockout punch.
That's a fair way to look at it. Now, look, the other issue here, and it's the one that you and I have talked about in the start of the year, and it has been the source of frustration, I know, for the fan base, and that is we talked about the talent in the team. Sometimes the talent, particularly in basketball, because as we've talked, Darryl, over and over again, the thing about basketball, you're playing offense and defense simultaneously, basically, because you saw it last night. You had a situation in a Laker game where Denver ended up with the bigs wanting to shoot threes from outside. And when that happens, guys leak out, and if you don't have floor balance, you get killed because everybody wanted to do the same thing, and then you get exploited. You know that this Fresno State team has not been a cohesive unit. There's no question about it. It has hurt them because people have not been able to be on the court enough to be in roles that they're supposed to be by this time all sorted out. We talked about February being the target. Obviously, they haven't been able to get everybody there to start to play as a unit throughout 40 minutes. Leaving that aside, anything about this talent level that says it wasn't as good as we thought, or when you see individuals jump forward like Hart on a given night, because last night he was outstanding. Without him, they're not even close in that game. We've seen Robinson be dominant from time to time. We talked about Hyder before he got hurt. Campbell, when he keeps it under control. Daryl, were we right about the talent level? Not the cohesiveness, but the talent level. Is it exactly as you thought it would be as these guys have been in D1 ball now?
It is. These guys have played phenomenal as freshmen. I mean, now what the problem is, everybody's going to say, well, look at the record. And I'm going to say, you're right. But when you play, when you're forced to play, you know, five freshmen together, you know, in your first and second strings, that's where you can't have a 500 record. It's just the sheer volume of those players. You know, had Fresno State had Vontae Hendricks, who's now playing at New Mexico, on their roster, Darrell Edwards, who's now playing at UTEP, on their roster, and not had all the injuries to Noah Blackwell early seasons, and I could go on and on.
How about Bryson still here? How about that one? You want to throw that one in? What if Bryson stayed here?
I'm just
asking.
We could go back 2 years to do that, but I'm just talking about guys who we thought were here.
Well, guys that would still be here. Yeah, you're right. Okay, fair enough. But, I mean, okay, so what about it then? Does it mean that the future is as bright next November, as it appears it is, or is it still to be determined, or is it illusory? I mean, where are you at with this team? I don't want to write off the end of this year. That's the beauty of the do-over nature of a conference tournament. But assuming they don't win four straight, are you still optimistic about November of 2020?
I am. With Orlando Robinson, Niven Hart coming back on this squad, you know, I've always been a big fan of Aguirre Gao. They have a good rim protector in Las Rojas. They have a nucleus there of players and guys who got valuable experience in Anthony Hollins and Jared Hyder that I think this team going forward has that. Plus the recruits they got already committed for next year. They've got some really good players. So that being said, the problem with this year's team was they had an expectation of two or three players they thought were going to be in starting roles or six-man roles. And the rug got pulled out from them, and they went without those players. That being said, you know, the freshmen had to fill in those starting roles and those six-man roles. They weren't supposed to. Next year, they'll be sophomores. They'll be more acclimated for it. They'll be better to do it. One thing you'll see this summer is they'll be out there shooting a lot of three-pointers because they struggled early on for much of the season. They were their three-point percentage collectively were horrible for the freshmen. You know, the seniors closed out pretty well. New Williams, Nate Grimes, and Noah Blackwell. And it's been good to see Niven Hart improve, Anthony Holland improve. And all this summer, they know where their shots will come. They know where they need to make them from. And you're going to see major improvement in all these freshmen. And that's why I'm not worried about next year's team, because Coach Hudson, he's shown he can recruit. He's shown he can coach. And they'll come back next year, you know, and hopefully won't have the same rug pulled out from them like they did this past year, and not with injuries or ineligibilities or anything else that might happen. So, you know, I'm not worried about next year. It's just you want to get through this year with as many positives as possible.
Are we going to see not the core of the guys we've talked about? Obviously, that's what this team is going to put its hopes on going forward. We're going to see a lot of turnover toward the bottom half of this roster, guys that we thought might be impact guys like Ju, for instance. Are we going to see a different look to the entirety of the roster, say, from eight down in the rotation next year?
Well, I think this summer everybody's going to have to earn it. I think you're going to see a lot of work going on, including the new players who come on this roster with the freshmen, with the two holdovers from last year's team. Laz Rojas will be a senior. Actually, Christian Gray, who's redshirting, will be a senior. Then Aguirre Gao will be a junior. So you've got those three players, you know, hold over from last year's 23-win team. And then you've got all the freshmen from this year's squad. So, yeah, I think you're going to see some people battle out for positions, battle out for playing time. You know, will Orlando Robinson become a five? That's a question. You know, will some of those other centers, you know, whether it be Rojas or Juve, you know, get more minutes. You know, who knows if the freshman Braxton Mia, the San Joaquin Memorial kid, if he'll, you know, get some playing time. There's a lot of, there would be a lot of competition out there, so I can't guarantee anybody playing time, you know, except for Robinson. But that being said, there's a lot of talent out there, and these freshmen now know what to do. Now they now know what's expected. And believe me, they got more experience than any set of freshmen in the nation. I mean, there's other teams that have more talented freshmen when you look at two or three deep, but nobody played as many minutes as you know, these freshmen here, you know, whether it be, you know, you look at guys who played 100-plus minutes, 200-plus minutes, do any comparison around the nation, and Fresno State's right up there with anybody.
Well, again, they have still four to go in the regular season, three at home, the one game at Nevada, the only one on the road. 7 o'clock, Utah State on Saturday. It's AgFest. Hope you're out at SMC. Paul and Q will have the broadcast for you at 6:15. Then Air Force on Wednesday, then to Nevada, then the senior day against Wyoming, and then we'll see as they get ready for Las Vegas and what would have to be four straight. All right, Darryl, in the last minute, appreciate the time as always. Visit Darryl at hoopmag.com, part of NBA.com. Want to ask you about Tyler Johnson. I've told you the last couple of years I think he would fit nicely with the Warriors. I kind of figured the way things have gone for the Suns that he would end up being a free agent or someone who's looking for a team at this point, but I don't think the Warriors are looking at him in the spring. Are the Lakers or the Clips? Because Collison evidently is not going to come around, even though Collison was going to be a point guard. Are they going to look to sign TJ? What's he going to do for the rest of this year? Or is he going to have to wait for the summer?
I think that they're interested. I mean, it doesn't mean they're going to do it. They both are pretty stacked at the guard position. You know, so it's not necessarily that they need him, but he is a good player. You know, so he is the type of person that both teams are seeking out. The Warriors, not so much. You kind of have to wonder if, you know, they're, you know, happy to tank. But I like you thought he would be a perfect.
Don't have to wonder. You don't have to wonder about that. Again, I'm starting at shooting guard tomorrow night, so you don't have to wonder what the Warriors' intent is, Darryl. Okay, so.
I was just hoping he would go there with the Mountain View connection that, he, you know, being from there, and it would have been a nice, and I think he would be really good on that team next year. So I thought from that perspective, it was a possibility, but I haven't heard any rumors, any inklings of anything. So I expect him to land somewhere. He's too good a player, and he needs to be on the playoff spotlight, because when he played for the Miami Heat, he showed everybody he was one of the top six, seven men out there. In Phoenix, things didn't work out so well, but that team really had a lot of problems at the guard spot. So it wasn't that they weren't happy with him. Monty Williams was singing the highest praises about him, how he gives up his body for anything, how he plays through injuries. But that was part of the problem. The Suns were a messed up roster, partly, and also he had a lot of, you know, a lot of injuries. He still has a little knee problem that's going to bother him right now. But he's out there playing and giving what he has. His numbers have dropped off from 2017, but there was a reason that the Miami Heat gave him a 4-year, $50 million contract, and he's not going to get that same type of money next time. But I'm sure he's going to be looking for a portion of that mid-level exception this summer and hopefully making somewhere between $5 to $10 million on his next connection.
I could see the Warriors talking to him in the summer. I could also see Pat Riley picking up the phone and saying, let's bring him back to Miami at a reduced rate for this year. We'll see how it plays out, because the Heat have a real shot, I think, to make a run. Darryl, appreciate it, my friend. I'm sorry we're out of time. Again, like Matt Damon, I can't bring up the San Antonio Spurs, but by the way, nice losing streak. We'll get to it next week. Appreciate it, my friend. Hope people visit hoopmag.com, part of NBA.com. I'll see you, Darryl.
Tim Duncan forever.
Thanks. Thanks for that. All right, guys, we'll take a break and wrap it up on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN.